Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. It's Memorial Day weekend, and this is Dr. John Stamey with a very, very special scary cast. I am always working on a book or two or three, and I have met a wonderful cryptozoologist, Robin Moonshadow, and she and I have a lot of similar research interests. How you doing today, Robin?
I'm doing great. How are you doing down there?
I'm doing pretty good. It's cool. It's hot but cool. In other words, so
oh,
it's getting really summertime
opposite.
And
hot here.
Now you're up in Canada, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. I'm up in Ontario, Canada. That's right next to New York and New York State. But it is hot.
And how
it's Fahrenheit, it's about 80.
That's pretty hot. It was about 72 today and cloudy, and I was kind of glad. If I'm going to be inside, I like for it to be cloudy because then that way I don't have to run the air conditioner so much, you know.
Yeah.
I just hate the feeling of all that cold air streaming on me, but that's okay. Anyway, we're so thrilled to have you here today. What I was going to tell everybody is this very special scary cast. I am finishing up the last bit of research on my book, The Lizard Man Companion. And come to find out, this past Thursday night on Scarycast, thanks to Robin McRae, who was able to get you to come on as a guest, we found that we have a lot of similar research interests. And
yes, we do.
And Robin, you and I discussed that we would talk a little bit about some of your research regarding my buddy, the Lizard Man. And
mm-hmm.
So everybody, this is going to be kind of how I work together with a valuable person who's a resource and get things ready to go. So this is not your typical interview. This is a conversation as we try to get some things straightened out in some, I wrote some things down. I've done some research. And then I'm going to talk to Robin and see, well, is this correct? And what else do we need to say and everything? So Robin, is it ready, set, and what's the next word?
Go.
Go. All right, great. Okay, you told me, it was interesting. You said that one of your relatives was in the Vietnam War. Is that correct?
Yeah, one of my relatives was. Yeah, I do believe it was my great-grandfather.
Great-grandfather, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I had grandfather, but...
Mm-hmm.
So the great-grandfather.
But it wasn't him that saw the lizard people. It was a friend of mine. It was her grandfather.
Okay. Also, I'm going to put that also, a friend's grandfather had this close, let's say close, and frightening event. Is that fair enough to say? I'm sure it was a little frightening, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I bet it was. It was during the Vietnam conflict, and him and four of his companions, his soldier buddies, had come across a lizard person, and they were ordered to kill it. So him and the four others chased this lizard person into a cave, and there was a whole bunch of them, a whole bunch of these lizard people, and they were ordered to kill them. And I asked the questions, you know, were they the people that had the skin disorder? No, these were lizard people.
Okay. Now, what I said, I did some research, and it seems as though, and let me tell you this story, I don't know if you've heard it or not. Have you ever heard of the Hong Son Dung Cave in Vietnam?
Yes.
Okay. Well, what happened in 1991, a hunter was panicking, and he was trying to avoid a flood from a monsoon. And he kind of slid down what seemed to be a ditch, and it was actually an entrance to this cave. There's a large river that runs through the cave. I mean, it's about 250 feet tall, you know, the cavern is, and about 80 feet wide. Now, 250 tall by 80 feet wide, one of the authors said that that's big enough for a 40-story building. That's gigantic. And in there seem to be lizard people, lizard men. And I am thinking that they may have chased them into this particular cave. Now, do you think that might be possible? It's now a tourist attraction, but people are warned not to go very far from the mouth of the cave. Do you have any idea exactly where they had their experience?
No, I don't. But I believe in synchronicities, so it could be possible that that is the very same cave.
Well, I kind of think it is, because where else would you – I mean, it's acknowledged that there are lizard men in that cave. So, I mean, I don't know. It seems like it might be so. Now, they were ordered to kill these. Were they actually able to kill them with rifles?
Yeah, they were. They killed them with their machine guns. Yeah, there was like 15 or 20 lizard people in this cave. And, you know, they didn't have tails or anything. They had this scaly skin. Excuse me. They had the scaly skin, and they had that wide, you know, lizard-like mouth and black eyes. And, you know, they did have five fingers, of course, and they were clawed. And
they had five fingers?
Yeah, they had the five fingers.
Now, do we have any notion, did they have... See, because the lizard people that we talk about in South Carolina have three claws on the hands and three claws on the feet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what do you think? Could this be a different variety, or what could it be?
They could be a different variety, absolutely, or a subspecies of one another.
Okay.
These ones also wore clothes. They had a loincloth.
Say that again?
Yeah, they wore a loincloth. Like a little cover over their waist.
Right. Now, definitely unlike Lee County.
Yes. So,
okay.
Well, what my grandfather told me about Vietnam is they have a whole bunch of different animals there that we don't have here, and you'd be amazed by the things that you don't want us to have here. And he said it in a particular way, and, I mean, he didn't talk about the war very much at all. He had a bit of shell shock, so... or what they call PTSD now.
And did he, and again, sorry for my little delay, I'm just trying to jot these notes down. Did he mention about any of the other animals over there?
Oh, well, and it's actually something we don't talk about a lot. This is what they would do when they were on their way back on the boat. They would throw their nets over to catch fish, you know, something different to eat. And it's going to sound far-fetched, but I don't believe that he made it up, because, you know, it bugged him a bit. They caught a baby mermaid, or what they believed was a mermaid. He said it was just the cutest little thing that you ever saw. It was very atypical mermaid-looking. You know, it had blonde hair and the fish tail. But other than that, it looked just like us. And they had that for the day, and they had planned on bringing the baby back with them. And about a few hours later, a female came, and they said, oh, she was beautiful. You know, she had the long, dark hair, and she just beautiful. And, again, she had the mermaid tail and the arms and stuff. And she would cry, a really high-pitched cry, because she wanted her baby. You know, and she kept that up for about 3 days. And on the third day, a male appeared, and he was horrible, ugly-looking. Like, he had gills on the side of the face, you know, near his neck. And he, you know, he wasn't pretty at all. I mean, he had the dark hair, and it wasn't very well looked after. And he would make grunting noises and these screeching noises at the boat, but, you know, they followed them. And, you know, they put the baby into one of their boats, a rowboat, and pushed it out because they didn't want to have to deal with that anymore, especially that high-pitched screaming. And, you know, they just reached into the boat and took the baby, and they were gone. They didn't see them again. But, yeah, I mean,
now,
Vietnam has got a whole other animal world down there, if you will, that we don't even know about. I mean, things are popping up there all the time that people don't believe exist, and they do.
Okay, that people don't believe exist. Like, what else other than mermaids?
Oh, and well, and the lizard people, of course.
Yeah.
And they're,
well,
they're said to have a giant spider like the Jaba Fofi in the African Congo. Or the Jaba Fofi is like, you know, six feet tall on its legs and bigger around than a dinner plate.
I'm sorry, so a Jaba Fofi that's 6 feet tall?
Yep, it's a really big spider.
And what would you say? What did you say was as big as a plate?
Yeah, its body itself is bigger around than a dinner plate.
Wow.
Now, the Jaba Fofi, you know, they're a giant spider, and they live in the Congo. They're rarely seen now. The locals used to talk about them. But now, the locals say, you know, they're kind of rare because we rarely see them.
Okay.
I mean, of course, then we have, you know, the array of snakes and the rumors of giant snakes also in Vietnam.
Well, why didn't we hear more about this from the soldiers?
Well, same reason we don't talk about a lot of things is we'll get accused of being crazy. But we do hear stuff from soldiers from time to time. We hear about the Bigfoot in Vietnam. And they would call them like hairy people, and they'd be throwing rocks and stones at them when they'd get into certain areas. And they also have proto-pygmies, you know, a.k.a. little people there as well. And the little people actually utilize all the tunnels that they built underground now. There is a story about proto-pygmies that came from an Australian gentleman, and I don't remember his name. This was quite a few years ago, and it was kind of the same thing. His grandfather was called a tunnel rat, and they would send these people, these gentlemen, down into the tunnels that the Vietnamese built underground, you know, to ferret them out. And
now,
know,
where was this? This was an Australian gentleman who... Okay. Gotcha.
Okay, so it was his grandfather or great-grandfather, and he was called a tunnel rat. So they would send these gentlemen into the tunnels that the Vietnamese built underground, because that's how they got around, was through these underground networks of tunnels. So he was sent down, him and some of his friends were sent down to, you know, ferret out the Vietnamese. And they saw three or four, you know, little people that looked like little Vietnamese people, you know, 3 feet tall, run past them in these underground networks of caves. They didn't shoot them. They said, you know, well, we, okay, kind of, and just went right on, you know, doing what they were doing.
They weren't just kids. They weren't just 3 foot tall kids now, were they?
No. No, they described them as having, you know, a little wrinkly face and kind of looked like old men. And he said they even had on the bamboo hats.
Bamboo hats and wrinkly.
Yeah, they looked like little wrinkly old men, but they looked Asian. But they weren't kids. They were running around in their bare feet.
Okay. Well, that's what it is. Now, is it possible? And again, I'm not doubting a word you're saying, but I'm just trying to explore all the avenues. You know, over here in the United States, we had quite a number of what people would call midgets. There was a
mm-hmm.
certain deformity that some people would have, and they would only grow up to be 3 feet tall or 2.5. Is it possible that that's what we were dealing with over there?
It could be. Like, in all fairness, yes, they could have been diminutives without being proto-pygmies. That's a very fair analysis of that, yes. But we know that there are proto-pygmies that do live there. Like, you know, I'm sure they're related to Homo luzon somehow.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with Homo luzon.
Homo luzon. They found skeletal remains in the Philippines last year, and these remains show that these little people were around at the same time, you know, modern humans were, and the locals call them Duende. So they're still around today. These guys, they're not midgets, or you know, they're about 3 feet tall. And they have no deformities. This is just the way that they're built. And there's no signs of, like, island dwarfism. They're just simply little humans.
Wow. And so they are still around now?
Yeah. They're seen by the local people, and they're called the One Day.
Can you spell that, the One Day?
D-U-A-N-E, I believe. If not, I will send the correct spelling to you later.
Okay, now that's interesting. I never really heard about them so much. But, all right, so basically you're saying that in Southeast Asia, it is a wild and crazy place.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, we've got Laos and Cambodia, which are really
mm-hmm.
part of the Vietnamese or the French Indochina Peninsula. I mean, I think it would be absolutely frightening to be over there. So did they hear any language? This gentleman from Australia, did they hear any language from these people?
No, it wasn't mentioned that they heard them. But
okay.
as for proto-pygmies, yes, they have their own language. It's a very ancient language, and they also understand what we say. And I would say about 98% of all little people live underground.
Little people.
Oh, I know that. Yeah. The little people live underground.
So maybe some of these proto-pygmies had some interaction with the lizard man.
It could be. And I'm sure they didn't like them.
In other words, the lizard men could have used them for food?
Yes. Yes. Now, proto-pygmies, little people, and Bigfoot share the same territories. There's no competition for food. And I would assume, and I'm just assuming, that they actually would be kind of friendly with each other. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've been out and seen both little people tracks, native little people, footprints, their little tiny moccasin feet footprints, and, you know, just a couple hundred yards away, Bigfoot tracks. So,
well, now, do these little people, are they hairy and like a miniature Bigfoot?
Well, there's different types of little people. We have the Native American little people. You know, they look like little natives. They dress like little natives. And then you have ones that are also hairy. Like, I have ones in my area. They're called Mamegawessing. And they are little hairy people. And I do see why people mistake them for juvenile or small Bigfoots, because they are hairy. If you saw one running away, you'd think it was a juvenile Bigfoot. They don't wear clothes. They don't need to. They're hairy, right? They go on their bare feet.
Yep.
Now, the,
yep.
Of course, the native little people, they do wear clothes, of course. Pakwajis, they wear like a loincloth. And I mean, like, there's a bunch of different types of these little people. But if they came across the lizard man, they would either run from it or they would go after it because numbers overwhelm. There's also the Pakwajis, which I've mentioned, and they are the worst of the little people. They hate our guts. They'll go out of our way to kill us or hurt us. That's how much they hate us. And
now,
there's a story.
What does a Pakwaji look like?
Well, they're a gray color. And they either have, you know, a pug nose or a bulbous nose. And they're practically bald. They have no hair on their head, but they're quite muscular little guys. And they do talk. You know, and like I said, they don't like people. I know they've been blamed for, you know, people disappearing and whatnot, because they just hate our guts.
Why?
Well, it goes back to Moshop the Giant and First Nations, and how the people loved the giant Moshop because he was good to his people. And the Pakwajis got jealous of this and how the people loved Moshop more than them, and they just started terrorizing the people. And this is the short version. They just started terrorizing the people, and the people went to talk to Moshop and his wife, Squint, who was actually a Mamegawessing, one of these hairy little people. You know, can you do something about it? And so, you know, he got rid of all the Pakwajis, and him being a giant, he threw them all over the place, and that's how come, you know, they're all over. And some of the ones went back and were worse than ever and went terrorizing the First Nations even more. And this is how the hatred started, out of jealousy. It does say at one time they were helpful.
You said the First Nations. What are you talking about?
The First Nations here, like Iroquois.
Okay.
Yeah, Iroquois, in Nova Scotia, the Mi'kmaqs have native little people there according to a friend of mine, yeah, they were just all over the place there. I mean, he had two of them running in and out of this house one day, just playing around, pulling pranks, because they love to joke around and pull pranks and be silly.
Okay, I mean, were they mean or just playing pranks?
Oh, just playing pranks. Red
okay.
caps, they're like the anti-gnomes. They pull nasty pranks. Yeah, they're not the nice gnomes.
Okay. All right, now, I've got a couple of, let's see how we're doing time-wise, because this is fascinating. We're going to have more talks about this. I like this. Now, we've got two incidences up in Kentucky that I want to talk about. One is the gnomes up in Hellier. Goblins up in Hellier.
Goblins, yeah.
And they have three toes, and they were down in the mines. Now, at three toes, it always jumps out to me that that might be a relative of the lizard man. What do you think?
Well, I don't think these quote-unquote goblins of Kentucky were actual goblins. Okay, their description, for what I know as goblins, it doesn't fit. Okay, goblins are like another type of little people or semi-human little people. They up in Alaska, they were blamed for kidnapping a little girl who disappeared, and they never did find her. Okay, a goblin is like what they described as like Smeagol from Lord of the Rings, you know, long, lanky, and looks half-starved and come in a couple of different colors, you know, camouflage reasons, but they're not particularly nice either. But they're kind of few and far between, thank goodness. Now, the goblins in Kentucky sound like small aliens. What we hear about the typical grays, the gray aliens with the black eyes and, you know, abducting people. And I know that they tormented a man there really badly. They were coming up to his house almost every night, you know, just staring at him and running across the porch and tormenting the dog. When I first heard about this, I'm thinking, well, maybe it's a bunch of Dwundies coming to torment people, but no, because Dwundies still wear the gnome-type hats, the cone hats, and they still look like gnomes, you know, with the beards and stuff like this. These guys were hairless. And they were kind of a black or gray color with the big black eyes. So they sound more like little aliens to me than little people. I don't know, when the gentleman told them, you know, go leave me alone, they didn't.
And what did he do, walk outside and tell them to leave him alone?
Well, yeah, because they would, like, rap on the windows and torment him something awful. And just stare at him, you know. And to me, it was like they were trying to drive him away. And he told them, you know, go on. And they didn't. They just kept it up. And
well, we have. Well, now we have.
And then just one day they were gone.
Well, what I've heard is that if you use the power of prayer, that gets rid of them.
Well, they have their own religion, you know, just like all First Nations used to have, you know, their own religious beliefs. Now, for Pakwajis, yeah, I've heard that works as well. But Pakwajis see us as nothing, really. They don't care one way or another.
Well, I've heard that if you use the power of prayer, if you're being abducted, they will go away. That's what I've heard. And
if you're being abducted by aliens? Yeah, I've never heard that.
Yeah, I have. And here's what else I heard. Because we had an official from MUFON at this conference, and my speaker, who is an ordained minister, said, you know, it is fact. And we have record of this, that whenever you start praying, they will leave. And so I stood up and I asked that head of one of the state MUFON chapters, well, then why don't you discuss this and tell people that if they will do that? And you know what the answer was? Do you know what the answer was? And this is the last time I ever invited this person to an event. Well, we don't want to get in the business of religion.
What?
That's what a head of a state MUFON chapter told me, well, we're not in the business of religion. And so I said, so you're in the business of getting people abducted? And that was the end of that.
But maybe he shouldn't look at it in a religious way.
Wasn't he?
Maybe it's scientific, and it breaks something that they're doing. Maybe the act of praying, because, you know, it's also in your mind when you pray, breaks some control they have over you. So that would be more scientific from their end than religious. But if that is something that could help, then why not say that? People who have been abducted are terrified, and they can't do anything to stop them. So if this is something that would help them, well, why wouldn't they just say that?
Well, now, as I've told you, and I've said this many, many times on my shows, I keep a Bible around with me all the time, and I pray all the time. I'm absolutely not ashamed to say it. I'm very proud of the fact that I do, and I think I have a great relationship. But, I mean, just the fact that something like that could help, it's just nuts that they won't do it. I mean, just it doesn't make any sense. But you know what, Robin? A lot of things in this world don't make sense, do they?
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's true.
That's what I've got to say. And I've gone on record a hundred times about this.
A lot of things that don't make sense, too. It's okay. But if this is like a tool that they could utilize, you know, and then they're not big on religion, then still use it and look at it in a different way. I mean, prayer is prayer no matter how you use it.
You're right, 100%. You know, it's real funny. I've got a story I want to tell you. I have a dear, dear friend, and she is co-host on one of my podcasts. And she told me that she was involved in a business deal where they were filming a ghost story kind of thing at an old semi-abandoned insane asylum. And she said, John, I've been there twice now, and I get the creeps, and I don't get the creeps. And I get the creeps, and I feel like something's watching me, and something's following me and everything. What do I do? I said, oh, that's easy. I used to have that a lot, and I just carry a Bible with me, and I pray. That stuff does not bother people that pray. It just doesn't. And she said, well, that might be a little difficult because I'm an atheist. And I said
okay.
to her, I think this was the wisest thing I ever said. I said, well, then that situation is problematic.
Yep.
I mean, what else do I say? And you know what she said? She actually kind of took my advice, because she is a very spiritual person, and she's a wonderful lady, really, really wonderful. One of my very close friends. And here's what she said to me after the whole thing was over. She said, you know, John, I really did take your advice in the way I would take it. I realized that I'm a good person, and I do good things for people. And I kept thinking over and over and over, you do not need to mess with me because I do great things for other people. I said, well, dear, that's prayer. And
yep.
So the prayer worked. Whether you wanted to call it that or not, whether you're an atheist or not, you learned about prayer. And you know what? I'm very happy that in some way I taught you about that. That's great. I mean, Robin, do you think I felt good about that?
I think you should have. I mean, maybe you could have changed
thrilled.
It to
I mean,
at least an agnostic.
She's still a great friend. If I called her up and said, I got a problem, she'd haul the family in the car and come help me. I mean, she would. She's that nice a person and that good of a friend. So the whole point is, if you can muster up a defense, I mean, Amityville Horror. I mean, we've done Daniel Lutz and the Amityville Horror, I mean, in Murder 1-2-3 and Scary Cast and everything. Nobody ever talked about praying. I'm going to tell you something. Some prayer would have helped those folks up there. I believe something bad was going on. I believe it was. Daniel has even admitted to me. I'm actually friends with Daniel Lutz. He was a kid. on Facebook, and we still sometimes he'll talk. I try not to invade his privacy because he went through a lot. Whatever he went through, he went through a lot. But you know, it seemed like a little bit of prayer would have helped.
Yeah, I agree.
It did. And no, not a little prayer, a lot of prayer up there.
A lot
okay.
of them poor people, yes. I do
so,
believe
I mean,
that the Lutz had a horrible traumatic experience, whatever it was.
You hit the nail on the head. I don't know what the heck went on up there, but something was not good.
Yes.
And I think it's gone right now because, or as Robin McCree would say, it is just lying in wait for the next group to terrorize.
Yeah, we usually call those types sleeper cells. Whatever it is we call it a sleeper cell because it'll go to sleep for, you know, so many years and then it'll wake up after it's had a rest and start terrorizing again.
As I say, it will go to sleep for days, weeks, months, years, decades, but one day, hello, I'm back.
Yep.
Sounding like Poltergeist here. They're
yeah,
back.
Yeah, I actually, my late friend Scott and I invested a case here close to the city where I live. Now, we got it at the tail end of it. But, you know, it's like every 20 or 30 years it wakes up, you know, throws dishes out of the cupboard, and who's ever living there has to leave for the week or two that it's just going on a rampage. But, yeah, at the end of it, it was able to only push a penny, like a one-cent penny, from one side of the windowsill to the other. But I would have liked to have caught it, you know, while it was on its rampage.
Well,
yeah,
it's
a sleeper cell. Like, yeah, I'll still be alive the next time, you know, it wakes up. And it's been going on for like 100 years.
Yeah.
So, you know,
and
at some point it's going to wake up and start, you know, going on a rampage or a temper tantrum again.
Yeah, I know. I do know what you mean. And, you know, I'm fortunate so far. I've not had anything like that, but I do pray a lot and keep my Bibles with me and try not to do bad things to people. Although sometimes when they do bad things with you, it's a little tough. So I just turned it into a laughing game and I start laughing at them. And that,
because
that
it is
gets,
karma.
Yeah, it is. And I tell you what, karma.
Eventually, it will catch up to them.
Karma, all karma takes is about 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And then karma can start. And that's exactly what you do not want. But anyway, I guess what I wanted to say is it's been wonderful talking with you about these things. What I would like to do is I've got about 2 weeks to finish Lizard Man Companion. I'd like to start doing, and everybody, this is just the first time I've asked Robin, but we'll see if she says yes or not. I'd like to start doing a series of interviews with you about the little people. Would you be interested in us just having some Sunday afternoon interviews on ScaryCast? I think it'd be fun. And by the way, on this past Thursday night, you mentioned about the Elf University over in Iceland.
Oh, yeah, the
right?
Elf School in Iceland, yeah. You can order a book. Yeah, you can order
them. I am getting ready to order it tomorrow. Heck,
oh, that's
yeah.
awesome. They
and
are very open over there about it, which I think is fantastic. And if we were all a little bit more open about these things, you know, you'd be surprised what you'd see when you're more open to these things.
61% of all people in Iceland believe in them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a gigantic majority for something like this. I mean, gosh, when you say 35% believe in something, we think, oh, this is great. 61% is a gigantic majority, you know, and that's what I would call it. And I can't wait. I also want to try to get, and maybe you and Robin McCree and I can do a scary cast and interview the gentleman that does the tours. I don't think he would mind. He seems like I saw a video on him, and he's got a bit of a brogue, but he speaks pretty good English. And I think he would probably enjoy being interviewed. So I'll see if I can get him to come on the show with us. Would you help us? Would you help me and Robin interview him?
Oh, absolutely.
There you go. You see what happens?
Yeah,
see what happens when
you
get on a scary past episode? It just mushrooms.
I mean, I know a lot about elves because, you know, I kind of look like an elf. I've actually got pointed ears. It's funny. But he knows more about elves than anybody else I know, including myself.
Really? That's interesting. Well, we will find out what we can find out because, you know, the world of cryptozoology is absolutely one of the most fascinating things in the world because
mm-hmm.
we deal with entities that are not quite in the center of attention. Would you say that's the best way to put it? They're not quite in the center of attention, but they are very, very interesting.
Oh, yes,
and,
they're very interesting, yeah.
And I've had my stories and my experiences with the Bigfoot. Robin, there are times when I have things displaced, and it's a little bit maliciously here at my house. I couldn't find my phone one time. And so I found it, guess where? Underneath all the covers in my bed, at the bottom of the bed. Now, I didn't. And then I had another time, and that was about 2 weeks ago. I was absolutely floored. I mean, I'd come in the house. I hadn't been in the house for a minute, and I couldn't find my phone. Now, Robin, something's going on.
Well,
you'll
I
never
mean,
get.
Where was
well,
it?
No, I'm gonna take, it was on my counter. With a sales receipt, what I did was I went and called myself from Skype on my cell phone. I mean, on my computer, and it rang over there. And I went and looked, and a receipt from Walmart had been placed directly on top of it, so that I couldn't see it for love nor money. You know what I mean? It just looked like a receipt.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can't place anything that perfectly. I can't.
Yeah. So either you got a bit of a spook going through or little people are pulling pranks on you. It doesn't sound like they mean to be malicious. If it is little people, they're just joking around with you. A friend of mine in Toronto, he lives in a building, and he was making some spaghetti sauce. I do believe it was some homemade spaghetti sauce.
Oh, let's go hang out with him, okay?
And he's had... he got some thyme, like the spice seasoning thyme, and he put it on the counter, and he went away to do something. He came back. It was gone. He's like, not even 5 minutes. I know I put it on the counter. I took it out of the bag and put it right on the counter. Okay, it was gone. And, well, now he's got to go get more. And that second batch of thyme, you know, he kept a hold of it. He didn't even let it out of his hand. But he's had candy bars go up missing. He's had a large bag of potato chips come up missing, like he was watching TV, and he put the bag of potato chips down right beside where he was sitting on the couch. He went to the washroom. He came back. The chips were gone. And I said, okay, you got rats? He's like, no, not in this building. I'm like, do you think you got a ghost? He's like, I don't think so. I said, well, you know, if it's a ghost, it'll turn up somewhere else. And I said, well, if it's a little person and they've taken it, they'll leave you something in return. So he hasn't gotten back to me yet if they've left him something in return or not.
Well, it wasn't me, even though I would probably have taken him and gone to Walmart and gotten some French onion dip. Then I would have been the guilty party, but it wasn't me, okay? Not at all. But, yeah, in fact, Robin McCrae identified the type of little people that were here. And,
yeah,
I spoke to her
briefly before the podcast, and she says that she has one there probably about as big as a thumb. And they don't have wings, and they don't like to be called fairies. Okay, not a lot of people know this, but before Victorian times, they never painted little people with wings. It wasn't until after Victorian times where they started adding the wings to quote-unquote fairies and little people.
If I'm not mistaken, that is a little bit of an Irish tradition, the wings.
It is. Now, the other story that I heard about a person being that big came from Alaska, and the gentleman woke up one night because one was crawling over his chest and was having trouble getting through his beard. So he was getting his beard a little pulled on, and it looked like a little teeny tiny gnome.
Well, did he carefully pull it out and let it go?
No, he just left it. He didn't even touch it because he was in that state. He says, I was awake. I wasn't half asleep. I didn't know what to do. I just let it go, finished crawling on over me, and, you know, off the side of the bed it went and gone. But it actually scared him a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, I've got a technique of something I'd like to share with you, and I've shared it with Robin. And here's what I do. I always charge my phone every night so that before I go to bed, it's at 100%. You know where I'm going with this?
Mm-hmm.
I then look at it in the morning, and if it's like 95, 97%, I know that I have had an entity-free evening. But if it's down to 30%, I know that something's been around me.
Oh, yeah, because they'll suck the power right out of batteries.
Exactly, but that's how I try to figure it out.
Well, you know, some will just suck that energy right out of batteries and everything else. A couple of years ago, we went up to an abandoned, closed down insane asylum in Kingston because I'd gotten some reports about people crying and people seeing ghosts in the yard and whatnot.
What state or province?
Oh, that was in Kingston, Ontario.
Okay, thank you. Okay, please continue.
Yeah, you can't go into this place because of the asbestos, because it's just riddled with asbestos. And, you know, I'd be willing to put on a hazmat suit and go in. But we'll do a haunted location at least once a year, and we check everything, like check your phones, and make sure everything is charged. Everything was fine, and we got there, an hour before dark, and everything is still fine, everything is still charged. We're taking pictures, and we're doing the walk around because the property itself is quite large. It's located on Lake Ontario, so really nice view. And so, okay, now it's time to get to it, So we set up out front. We can't set directly out front because it's a fire lane. So we're on the grass. And so I open my laptop that was fully charged before we left. It's down to 10. Okay, fine.
We got that one, don't we?
Yeah, they got that one. I get out my my tablet. Same thing. It's dead. And I even got a picture of me looking at my laptop, kind of funny, what's going on, but not so much surprised, So I get out my phone, which is at about on 90, and I had my phone in my phone case. So we do a bit of a live, and we wait, and we're not getting any action or anything. So, I do the live showing. But my battery dropped so fast even doing that live showing. I got down to like 10% in maybe 20 minutes. So I'm not surprised that they do that. And some of the pictures we got were interesting. I mean, everything my friend had gotten looked like it was fog. It wasn't foggy that night. It was a beautiful night. But it looked like fog. And then she'd get these really weird streaks of light where there wasn't any streaks. Lights or anything of the sort. No, you get some action via pictures. Now the gentleman that guard the place, they do it in shift work. He says, "I don't believe in ghosts." He says, but I ain't going in there. Okay, so he said there's coyotes that run through the hallways in there, and there's feces everywhere. He says, you know, I don't believe in ghosts, but we still have to put our hazmat suits on it, you know, and at least do a basic walkthrough. He says, I absolutely hate going in there. It's just creepy. Just creepy. And, yeah, they were very nice gentlemen. And, like, we were off on the grass, and he says, well, I can give you all about an hour. So, like, thank you. We appreciate that very much. And, yeah, it was great. But, I mean, even something small as just your battery draining can be significant. And, I mean, it wasn't just my stuff that it was happening to. I mean, there were four of us that night, and it happened to all of us. One particular, the youngest one in the group, yeah, her phone just dead. Just dead.
Okay.
And she was able to get maybe 50 pictures, but then it was dead and it was fully charged as well. I know sometimes, you know, phones have better batteries than other phones, but when it's happening to everybody, there's
You and I both know. You know, it's not, well, the battery's having a bad hair day. No, it just doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
No bad hair day for batteries, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. So,
oh, my
goodness. That might seem small, but it's very significant.
Well, it is. It's basically what happens. It's part of the living with living with the paranormal, which we
right.
do. And it just happens. And, you know, it's funny. When I was a little kid, when I was 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, I always wanted to be in this stuff. And you know what, Robin? Better be careful about what you wish for. Right? And,
well, for me, I've besides to be a veterinarian, I never wanted to do anything else. I wanted to be out there looking for undiscovered animals. I mean, like, I went to school to take animal sciences with a focus on behavior, and I learned, you know, to track animals, and everything that I have done is circulated around what I do now, and I'm able to do it full-time now because, you know, my kids haven't been home here for quite a few years now, so they don't need mom, so mom is going.
So mama's going to do what mama wants to do, right?
Mama's doing it, yep.
Well, yeah, that's good. Well, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
And I
love being outside, and I love doing this work so much because, I mean, like the boots to the ground work that I do, you learn so much. I mean, it's completely different when you sit there and you're reading about somebody else's experience and interactions, but when you go out and you find evidence and you get these interactions and sightings yourself, it's completely different.
Yes, it is. It really is, and people don't understand until they've been out there and had it happen to them, and all that. But I tell you what, it has been wonderful talking to you. And first of all, I appreciate you helping me fill in some of the blank in a couple of the stories that I've got for the Lizardman Companion. We'll certainly get you a copy of it when it comes out, hopefully in about 2 weeks. This last chapter, this is called Lizardman Stories from Around the World. And I'll tell you what, I've always gotten the creeps when I thought about Vietnam. I've always had the creeps. I've just always felt like there's some stuff over there we do not want to know about. And I'm correct, aren't I?
In one way, I would actually like to go to Vietnam to explore for myself. And in another way, no, because I believe that it would be so completely foreign to me and, you know, poison snakes and spiders and bugs and bees and everything else, that if you aren't just mentally and physically prepared for that, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. It's the same thing I say about going to the Congo as well. As much as I would like to go to the Congo to look for maybe Mekele Mbembe, I'm not going to do it.
Well, and also there's the political danger that something could happen and they could get mad at you because you're an American and just take you and throw you in a jail cell and we'd never hear from you again.
Oh, yeah, or whatever reason that they could think of, yeah. That's the other reason, too. But my work is, you know, Canada and America. Because we share a lot of the same animals, of course, and our Bigfoot act completely different in around here than they do in, like, say, down south. So you've got something to compare behaviors with, and it's absolutely fascinating. You would think a particular species would act the same throughout, and they don't.
Well, if you look at it, man as a species doesn't act the same in North America as it does in Asia and Africa. We all act differently. We do, too. There are many things that are different about our behavior. So why shouldn't there be differences in behavior with Bigfoot, with Lizardman? I mean, I am fascinated with the Lizardmen of Vietnam. I am just fascinated by them. And a fella, I've got one picture that it looks pretty good to me. And I'm going to try to grab that, and hopefully no one will complain, and I'm going to put that in Lizardman Companion. Thing's frightening looking. And I wouldn't want to mess with it.
You know, the Dracos that live really far underground as well, and they're just known as to rule the underground, the underworld, if you... And they just hate humans and will avoid us at all costs. And if they got the chance, they would kill us. I mean, even the Sumerian talk about lizard people. So, I mean, these lizard people go way far back.
Sumerians? We've got about 3 minutes. Tell me quickly about the Sumerians and the lizard people.
Well, with the Sumerians, you know, things are limited. But there was two little statuettes that were found of lizard people, a male and a female. And give me a second, and I will tell you what they were called. They were called Alu Yabad, and the people knew to stay away from them.
Spell that if you could, please.
Okay, it is. AL'UBAID.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll do a little bit of research and I'll see what we can find for our soon to be famous book, Lizard Man Companion. So look, thank you so much for your time, for being part of this broadcast, Scarycast special. And we'll have you on again very soon. We'll talk more and more about Lizard Man and cryptology. Fair enough?
Fair enough. Thank you very much for having me back.
Okay. Well, we'll talk to you soon, okay?
Great. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now.